because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walder.
I'm Scott Bauer.
I want to thank Scott Bauer of the Associated Press for filling in for the vacationing J.R. Ross. Scott, thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, okay. Wisconsin didn't play as big a role at the Democratic National Convention, certainly as we did at the Republican Convention. Correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, when you don't have the Speaker of the House in your party, when you don't have the National Party Chair in your party, it tends to have a little bit lower profile.
Yeah, we did. But we did have two elected officials from Wisconsin. Congressman Gwen Moore and Senator Tammy Baldwin spoke. And vintage Gwen Moore, although you remember from the state convention when she brought the bobblehead, mm-hmm. she didn't bring the bobblehead this time.
Right.
But let's hear a minute of what Gwen Moore said.
Fat pigs, dogs, disgusting. That is what Donald Trump thinks of women. Too many women know where this toxic language leads. Too many women have experienced sexual violence, and I'm one of them. We have been bullied. We've been beaten. We've been berated. We've been told to sit down and to shut up. Well, my voice matters, and I will not shut up. Now, Donald Trump has told us to sit down and to be quiet. Hillary is asking us to stand up. Hillary is asking us to be heard. My fellow Democrats, stand up with Hillary, because she has stood up for us.
Vintage Gwen Moore, Scott?
Oh, definitely vintage Gwen Moore. You know, she checks a lot of boxes in that speech. Goes after Trump, uses his own words against him, tells a very personal story.
Victim of sexual abuse.
Victim of sexual abuse, African-American woman. You know, for Democrats who have followed her career, you hear a lot of those. You know, it's a very Gwen Moore type of speech. For people who maybe aren't as familiar with her, maybe, you know, they were seeing her for the first time, it could be very energizing, very exciting. But I think in terms of this convention that was very scripted and very thematic, Gwen Moore on the last day hit on a lot of the themes that the Democrats are looking for more broadly, and she did that effectively.
She's a pretty good red meat speaker, isn't she?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, she was, you know, didn't have a whole lot of time, but I think she fed a lot of what they wanted to hear. And, you know, it wasn't a prime time spot.
No, it wasn't. No, probably she didn't make the prime time.
Yeah, it wasn't heard by a lot of people compared to later in the night. But, you know, it's out there forever for people to watch on the Internet.
She also continued the tradition of firsts. I mean, this convention nominated, obviously, the first woman candidate of a major party. Gwen is the first African-American from Wisconsin to serve in the U.S., to serve in Congress.
Right.
And then another first, Senator Tammy Baldwin, she spoke, and we were not able to find clips of her speech. She did talk about when she was growing up, she was raised by her grandparents, and she said they could not get health care for her because of pre-existing conditions.
Right.
So how big a force do you think she is in an event like this? Is she kind of the supporting cast?
Yeah, I mean, you know, she was out there with other female senators. The first, I think you're referring to, she was the first openly gay person elected to the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, thank you.
And then she checked the box of the health care issue, talking about how that was, you know, an important thing for her growing up, pre-existing condition. So again, you know, when you look back at the Republican convention and the role and the spotlight that was on Wisconsin Republicans, not the same with the Democrats. You know,
right.
Neither one of these speeches will be talked about among the highlights of the entire convention. But they were there, and they played their role, and they did what I think the Hillary Clinton campaign wanted them to do, and did it effectively.
And the roll call of the states, because Bernie Sanders carried Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Tammy Baldwin said, you know, 49 votes for Senator Sanders, 47 votes for Hillary Clinton. So representatives from Wisconsin played supportive roles.
Yeah.
But you covered the first visit by Republican vice presidential candidate Governor Pence to Wisconsin after he and Donald Trump, I think they appeared together in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And then that afternoon he came to Waukesha, which is where, isn't that where Governor Walker announces presidential?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's listen to, before we talk about it, let's listen to a couple minutes of the Pence speech.
My very first tweet, when he called me a Scott Walker Republican, I tweeted, "Thanks, Senator Schumer. Nobody said anything that nice about me in a long time. I'm a Scott Walker Republican." First and foremost, because after 7.5 years of leadership that has seen America's strength in the world decline and has stifled our nation's economy, I am determined to work with all of you to ensure that Hillary Clinton must never become president of the United States of America. We're going to win because we're running on the issues the American people want us to run on. Security, prosperity, and ensuring that the Supreme Court of the United States is peopled by constitutional conservatives who will uphold our rule of law and our finest traditions. He is first and foremost a leader who will grab Washington, D.C. by the lapels, and he will shake the results out that will unleash the full potential of the American people. That's what leadership does. People of Wisconsin, all my new best friends in Waukesha, here in this historic arena where so much of the history of your great governor has been made and will be made again, I believe we've come to another rendezvous with destiny. And I have faith. I have faith in the boundless capacity of the American people to meet that rendezvous with courage and vision. And I have faith that God is not finished with America yet.
Scott, where do we start? Why did presidential candidate Trump dispense Governor Pence to Waukesha, Wisconsin for his first rally alone?
First solo event.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, right? Waukesha County is the Republican, it's the heart of Republican Wisconsin, right? It's part of the WOW, one of the three WOW counties, Washington, Ozaukee, Waukesha. Okay, so why on earth would you send a candidate somewhere where you would think it would be a given that you're doing well there? Mm-hmm. Couple things. In Wisconsin's primary back in April, Trump did not do well in Waukesha, Ozaukee, or Washington counties. In fact, he lost to Ted Cruz by 39 points in those three counties.
39 points?
Collectively.
Thank
39
you.
Points, okay? He lost statewide by 13. He lost those counties by 39. So in those counties, you had basically not only the heart of the Republican Party, you had the heart of the Never Trump movement here in Wisconsin. Talk radio, apathy, opposition by Governor Walker at that point, who was endorsing Ted Cruz.
Yep.
Mike Pence, who we just heard from, had endorsed Ted Cruz, even though it was kind of a wishy-washy, half-hearted, late endorsement. He did endorse Ted Cruz in the Indiana primary. So you had all of this going on to lead to Trump's really humiliating defeat at that point for him in Wisconsin in those counties. If you want to win Wisconsin and you're a Republican, you have got to run up the vote in those counties, because you're going to lose in Milwaukee, you're going to lose in Madison, you're going to fight it out in the Fox Valley and Green Bay, you're going to fight it out in some other places, but you have got to run up the vote in those counties.
Can Trump appear on the same platform with Scott Walker after he said Wisconsin, remember, it's in bad shape, it's in horrible shape, and after Walker left the race, Trump just kind of dismissed him. So, can Trump appear on a podium with our governor?
I think it's highly likely we'll see that. I mean, we saw Governor Walker with Mike Pence. Governor Walker spoke at the convention. He really, since Pence's pick, I think that's given Walker some cover to be a little more full-throated in his endorsement of Donald Trump. He's been much more vocal about how, you know, this needs to be the pick. This is his endorsement. However you want to couch it. most models, when they look at the road to 270, the electoral votes you need to win, the majority of those models show Wisconsin being a state you need to win. It's probably not in the top tier of battleground states, the Ohio, the Floridas, Pennsylvania, but it's right there. So for Trump and for Clinton, you know, this is a state that they need, and arguably I think it's probably more important for Trump to win, and he's got some ground to make up from where he was in the primary.
Yeah, one of the national pundits put that this way, and I'm not smart enough to come up with the math. When Hillary Clinton, picked Tim Kaine, there's a potential there for Virginia 14 electoral college votes. That increases the pressure on Trump, Pence, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and states like Wisconsin, which has 10 electoral votes. So that's another reason why we saw Mr. Pence, and we're probably going to see him a lot.
Well, and to be fair, Hillary Clinton lost Wisconsin, right? So if you're looking at that, and she's got some work to do potentially, and that gets into the whole other argument about which party is more united at this point. Are the Bernie people going to fall in for Hillary? Are the Cruz people falling in for Trump? And there is evidence that the Republicans are coming around to Trump. The Marquette Law School poll, I spoke with Charles Franklin this week. He ran some numbers just for the WOW counties for me that showed that his approval, Trump's approval rating there was on par now with the statewide approval rating, whereas before it had been way down. So you're seeing movement for Trump in the right direction where it needs to be. The governor coming out more forcefully for him, and some other things are.
Well, I want to ask you about that. What is with this bromance between Walker and Pence? Are they kindred spirits as governors? Pence goes on to credit Governor Walker as kind of a mentor because Governor Walker's been in office longer than Pence. What's this bromance thing?
I think, you saw Governor Pence pursue some of the same or similar policies that Walker had done in his first term, collective bargaining things and social issues and things like that, where I think they're kind of a similar mind.
They're both evangelical Christians. Remember, Pence said, my order of priorities, I'm a Christian, then I'm a conservative, and then I'm Republican. He said that at that rally.
Yeah, and I think, there are some similarities between Indiana and Wisconsin, Midwest states. So I think he feels like, he sees a very similar type governor there. Now, prior to his pick as VP, I can't say that I've heard Governor Walker talk very much about Governor Pence.
I haven't either.
But I don't know what their relationship may be like, on the RGA or all these other things where they run into one another. But he sure has been very complimentary of Governor Pence.
Yeah, he really has. And at this Waukesha rally, we got the first glimpse of our three capital leaders, Walker and Assembly Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. They've now been freed up to full-throat campaign, let's all vote for Trump, although it's interesting how they seem to focus more on Mr. Pence and conservative values and the need for a Supreme Court. So let's listen to segments from Governor Walker and Assembly Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald at the same rally.
Mike Pence is an incredible, incredible governor. And I hope all of you here will share to others across this state and to others you might know across the country how important this election is. I think one of the best things that Donald Trump has done in this campaign was when he announced that Mike Pence was going to be his running mate. Mike told me it was the very first tweet he issued on Twitter was, he tweeted, "I'm proud to be a Scott Walker Republican." So Mike Pence is one of us. He's been one of us even before he became governor. He is a proud, full-spectrum conservative. He is an incredible leader. Donald Trump was giving us an insight into how he'll govern. You see, a lot of people say, well, he says these things, but what can he do? I think it is so important. You look ahead to the future. I'm voting on my conscience in this election. My conscience tells me I'm not going to let Hillary Clinton dominate the Supreme Court for the next 20 or 30 years with radical, out-of-control justices.
We need to have leaders who look at the world that we are in and literally address the problems head on. far too long, we have had politicians who have made promises and then never actually worried about delivering once they were elected to office. As we watch this campaign over the course of the next several weeks, we'll be reminded, like we have been this week, that there is no doubt in my mind that we have all got to focus on one simple thing. Hillary Clinton can never occupy the White House. They somehow believe that Hillary Clinton is the savior for our country. I promise you that is not true. Donald Trump, Mike Pence, men of vision, men who have actually done important things in both the private sector and changing government. Those are the people that we need in Washington.
And after we're done, this is going to travel across the entire country, okay? So let's practice it first. I'll do the Trump part, you guys do the Pence part, okay? I'll tell you how it's going to go. Trump, 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 Trump. Pence, Pence! Ready? This is the Trump train. This is it. Listen, this is what it sounds like. It's coming down the tracks, right? Trump, 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 Trump.
Pence, Pence!
Trump, 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 Trump.
Pence, Pence!
68% of Americans think that Hillary Clinton is not trustworthy. Do you agree? Everyone knows that she set up a server, both one at her home and at some guy's kitchen in Denver. Do you think that undermined the security of our country?
Yes!
So thanks for being here this evening, and we look forward to working with you guys all the way through November. So Trump, 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 Trump.
Yes, Trump!
Thank you. Thank you.
Scott, here's what intrigues me. Governor Walker ran for president, then he endorsed Cruz, and then finally he's now backing Trump slash Pence. Mm-hmm. I mean, he makes it clear that this Pence appointment really helped him get there. Voss, before he went to the convention, told you and told me, I'm not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Now Voss is saying, I really like Trump and Pence. And then Scott Fitzgerald, he was the first one to say, he's on the Trump train.
Right.
And now he's got a new chant to prove it, although...
It's catchy.
You and I have never seen the Senate Majority Leader...
No.
...that informal.
Yeah.
And it's probably not going to go viral, as he predicted.
Well, I mean, each one of these people is a fascinating examination of how they got from point A to point B, right?
Yes.
Fitzgerald was always the most kind of out there for Trump. And he's been very clear as to why. He's worried about what's going to happen down ticket. I mean, he said that. He came out and said, we have got to get behind Trump because it's not just about him, it's about everybody. And he's looking at his majority in the state Senate going all the way down that far.
Yep.
And is worried about turnout, worried about an enthusiasm gap and all of that. I mean, his job is to win state Senate seats. You know, I don't know that he would say that he doesn't care who's president. I think he does care. But his number one priority is keeping that Senate majority.
Right.
And he has very publicly said that Republicans who are not excited about Donald Trump need to realize that it's not just about him. So that's where he's coming from. Assembly Speaker Voss is much the same way. I mean, he endorsed Marco Rubio. He was very slow to come around to Trump.
Extremely.
And this clip was by far the most vocal he has been for Donald Trump. You know, even when he was going into the convention last week, he was, you know, voicing some hesitation about Trump as the nominee.
Well, how will this roadshow of Walker, Voss, Fitzgerald, how will it play in the key Fox Valley? I mean, do you see them as pretty effective and going to convince some voters to come over to board the Trump train?
Chant all the way across the state, I mean, who knows what may happen? You know, it could be a Mamba line all the way down the road. I don't know. You know, who knows? And all politics is local, right? So you could have a lot of weird dynamic on the ballot where you've got Trump winning in a county and a Democrat losing or vice versa.
Sure.
I think this year, given the dislike of both candidates at the top of the ticket, both Clinton and Trump have tremendous unfavorable numbers, unprecedented really. It's hard to know, you know, how that's going to translate.
Final point on this issue before we go to the next subject. The Trump campaign sending Pence here, that still sends a message that Wisconsin is considered a battleground state. Do you agree?
I absolutely think Wisconsin is a battleground state.
So do I.
It's just not as battlegroundy as Ohio.
Okay, I understand. Okay, I'm glad that you're filling in for JR for one reason. You we're part of the Associated Press national campaign team. And in all states, in all venues, how many, what, in Iowa, there are pizza what? Pizza what? What
pizza ranch.
Pizza ranches. Okay, though here's the point. You covered more than 100 Ted Cruz rallies, events. Mm-hmm. My question, I need your expertise. Help me understand why Cruz stood before the world last week and said, vote your conscience, and the Trump people knew 2 hours before, they had a copy of the speech. Help me understand. Some pundits say Cruz committed suicide. Your view?
I think there are a number of things going on, but the two most important are this. Trump and Cruz did not get along, and Trump went after Cruz in a very personal way, attacking his wife, attacking, you know, somehow suggesting that his father was involved in the Kennedy assassination, among a number of other things. And the campaign, the primary between those two, became very personal and very nasty toward the end. And the day that Ted Cruz dropped out, that morning, he gave a news conference where he called Trump a narcissist, the likes of which we've never seen, delusional, a liar. Every word that comes out of his mouth is a lie. And Cruz said this last week. It's very hard for him to get from that point to the point of embracing Trump as the nominee. So you've got that, number one. And number two, I think Ted Cruz is playing the long game,
okay,
and he's looking to 2020. And, you know, he never really disbanded his political team. You know, they're all kind of around doing similar things, although his comms guy went over to Trump. But a number of other people are still kind of working toward 2020. And I think in Cruz's mind, he's positioning himself as the standard bearer for the Republican Party if Trump would lose. He is the guy who is going to emerge and say, I told you so, and I never endorsed him, and now here I am. Come follow me, and we'll work toward 2020.
But with the emphasis in modern politics on loyalty, can the delegates at that convention forgive his what they consider to be betrayal in front of the whole world?
I think a lot can happen in 4 years.
Okay. All right. Tell us a little bit about Cruz. I mean, did he give the same speech 122 times?
He did. He was incredibly disciplined. You know, by the end of it, I think I could give it the same way that he could give it. But he was also quick on his feet, and he could mix it up a little bit. And you kind of knew when to listen to hear what might be new or different. But he was very good at campaigning. He was very good at retail politics. He did a kind of campaigning that Trump and Clinton have not done. He did the traditional going into the diner, going into the pizza ranch, stopping at the BP station, all over the place, and worked really hard. And I think he kind of lives for that kind of thing, and so he'll be ready.
But you can understand the pundits who say he committed political suicide with
his vote. Oh, it was a huge gamble for him.
Yeah,
right.
But
and he may win, he may not.
It didn't surprise you.
No.
Okay. Next subject. After Friday afternoon, a week ago, the governor announced Daniel Kelly as a Supreme Court justice. I'm struck by the lineup in terms of he gets 4 years before he's got to run, mm-hmm. because next up is April 2017, Justice Annette Ziegler, April 2018, Justice Michael Gableman, April 2019, Justice Shirley Abramson. We want to express our condolences to Justice Abramson. She lost her husband Seymour this week. But then, not until April 2020, Daniel Kelly. So he's got 4 years to make a record, mm-hmm. or to write more opinions like he wrote when he applied for the job that equated what? Do you remember?
Yeah, he equated slavery and affirmative action.
And then he didn't take any questions on that when the governor announced it.
Right. Yeah, so you've got, I think the most interesting thing to me is that he has no judicial experience, which is a thing that typically conservatives argue they want to see in a Supreme Court.
A record.
Justice, a record on the bench.
Yeah.
But as you noted, he'll have 4 years to build that record. He'll run as the incumbent justice. And so I think, you know, depending on how he rules between now and then, you know, he'll go into that election as, you know, I have judicial experience, whereas right now he has none.
I was surprised that the appointment didn't go to Judge Gundrum, District 2 Court of Appeals Judge Gundrum, because mm-hmm. he and the governor served together in the assembly, and Gundrum had been appointed to the Circuit Court and Court of Appeals the same track as mm-hmm. Justice Bradley. Were you surprised?
I was surprised. I think if you talk to people, I think a lot of people look, as you mentioned, that Shirley Abramson's seat is up in 2 years, 3 years.
April of 2019.
2019.
Right.
She will be in her mid-80s at that point, assuming that she, who knows if she'll want to run again. And whether she runs again or not, I think Mark Gundrum would be the number one person on the list to run for that seat.
Yeah, and he's only 47, although I think Mr. Kelly is, what, 53?
He's in his 50s.
Okay. Before we close, you were at a Paul Ryan event, mm-hmm. Speaker Ryan, mm-hmm. so he could come back to the district while the Democrats were in Philadelphia doing their Hillary Clinton thing. Did he look like somebody who's worried about the primary challenge from Paul Nylon?
No. No.
Not at all.
No, I don't think he doesn't project that. He doesn't seem to be worried about that. I interviewed him a month or so ago and asked him about that directly. You know, he's got millions more dollars than Paul Nylon does. He's run two campaign ads that don't even mention his opponent. He sure doesn't seem like someone who's worried at all about the primary challenge, although Nylon is running a very spirited and creative campaign, very aggressive against the speaker and trying to attract those same kind of Trump conservatives who are upset with the status quo. But, you know, Ryan's been in that seat a long time. People know him. He's the Speaker of the House. You know, I don't think a Speaker of the House has lost a primary ever, or you know, certainly not in modern
maybe
political
Mr.
history.
Democrat Foley, maybe, okay, decades ago. Mm-hmm. Did it appear to you that Ryan was happy to be back in his district talking in front of a group that wasn't the Republican National Convention about Donald Trump?
Paul Ryan wants to talk about Paul Ryan's agenda in the House.
Yeah.
Paul Ryan does not want to talk about Donald Trump. And it's very clear when he's out that he does not like to talk about Trump. He does it. You know, he'll answer the questions, but he would much rather be talking about his agenda in the House.
Yeah, that's good. What an interesting week. I'm Steve Walters.
I'm Scott Bauer.
And that's Rewind for July 29th. Scott, thanks for filling in.
You're welcome.
Thank you.